Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of The Huddle on ESPN Upstate. It is Wednesday, the 13th of June, with Greg McKinney, Richmond Weaver. Lonzo's off today. He's taking his midweek sabbatical here to regroup for the rest of the week with us.
He's been working too hard. He needs it.
Yeah. And Patrick Brown is in, filling in for Lonzo. We appreciate that. We're with you till 4 o'clock this afternoon in The Huddle, talking sports with you, coming up on the show today. Teddy Cahill, who is a senior writer with Baseball America, will join us at the top of the 2 o'clock hour, about an hour from now. And we will talk College World Series with Teddy. That opens up in Omaha on Saturday. No, we don't have the Gamecocks in there. No, we don't have Clemson Tigers there. No, we don't even have Coastal Carolina there. But we're still interested in the College World Series, and we'll get Teddy Cahill's thoughts on that coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Also going to talk a little bit about the NBA draft. We're just over a week away from that. That's a week from tomorrow night. And get some thoughts on who might go early in the NBA draft. Got our three questions at three segment coming up today. Rich take on sports returns. It's been a while since we did that, right?
Yes, it has.
Because we haven't all been here together very much lately.
Yeah, we've been off balance, off kilter for
just
a couple
bit.
Of weeks.
Just a little bit. But we'll get to that this afternoon in the 2 o'clock hour. We're going to preview the U.S. Open. It starts tomorrow in New York State, Shinnecock. And hear a little bit from Tiger. Why not? That's who we have to hear from, right? We're getting ready to play a major. We have to hear from Tiger, right?
It's all about Tiger. All of the majors are about Tiger. It doesn't matter if Dustin Johnson's number one in the world.
Mm-mm.
It's about Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Can he come back?
He hasn't played there since 2015, so he's happy to be back at the U.S. Open. And but last time it was at Shinnecock, he was not real good. I think he's a plus 10 back in 2004. So
that's a bad
tournament. That's not going to get it done. This is kind of a tough course. We'll talk about it coming up on the show as well. We're keeping an eye on the Atlanta Braves. They're beating the Mets this afternoon. I've already lost my bet to you guys that the Braves would not get back to first place this season because they did last night.
Happened last night. One game ahead of the Nationals now.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're up right now on the Mets again. They had a 12-10 start, and they're up 1-0. I think we're about the fourth inning, maybe the fifth, somewhere along that line. And we'll keep an eye on that game for you as the afternoon progresses. So plenty to talk about today, and we'll keep an eye out for any breaking news. There is no real LeBron news today. Not even a good rumor today. Yesterday, the rumor was he hates the city of Houston. Who knows? A lot of talk about the Lakers still, that he may go there.
There's still some discussion about that his wife has made comments that she likes either L.A. or staying in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to LeBron James making the decision and making it based on a basketball decision, but we don't know.
No, and you know, there's been reports that his kid is enrolled in high school. His kid's in the eighth grade, but anyway, enrolled in high school in L.A. All kinds of stuff floating around out there, and we'll continue to hear that until we get the decision. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Is this decision three?
Yeah, this will be three. Miami, back to Cleveland, and now whatever.
Yeah, and we don't know. But I think a lot of it also has to do, I know we're looking at LeBron James being the domino, but could it be Paul George's part of the equation as well? What does he decide to do?
There's reports today that Paul George doesn't want to leave OKC.
Yeah, so I mean, it's all over the map in terms of who's going to be the pivotal point. Who makes the first move, and then what happens at that point?
Yeah, and the problem is it's weeks away from being resolved. So
it is.
It's just, you know, going to be the lead story, I guess, for a while.
I mean, LeBron also did a TV decision, a magazine decision. Mm. What's the third decision going to be? Is he going to, like, live feed it on Facebook or something like that?
Yeah, it's time to go online, right?
Yeah, it'll be some type of social media aspect.
Yeah, a Facebook Live or something. I don't know. But
anyway.
They're
just sending out a simple tweet, and that'll be it. And that could be the most retweeted tweet ever.
Just do an emoji.
That's something. That's a possibility.
Make it as vague as possible.
Yes. he should drop hints for about 4 weeks before we get this decision.
Well, it's a shame that we have to wait this long, because if the Cavs could have kept going, we could have been actually talking about games. If we could have been getting to at least game 7.
No, those have been over for a long time.
I know. That's the problem. Come on, Cavs.
Yeah, they didn't help.
You're forcing us to talk about all this banter that we have no idea what's really going to happen. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes with LeBron James and if he actually has any type of inclination where he wants to go. I would suspect he's got to have a good idea.
Yeah, I'm sure he does, but I don't know that it couldn't be changed over the next few
Agreed.
Weeks.
Agreed. And as we talked about yesterday, right now, while free agency is technically not eligible from a team-to-team standpoint, there's no issues with players doing some recruiting and tampering with other players. They can go talk to them as much as they want and try to recruit them over to their team or to agree to a deal, you know, however it might be, once it opens up with discussions with each NBA team. But right now, it's recruiting season has begun.
No question. We'll follow it. Players have a ton of control in the NBA, so they'd really kind of turn the wheels.
It's a star-driven league, and we know this actually really started several years ago when the true kind of super team was put together with Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people want to say it was LeBron going to Miami, but LeBron going to Miami was in direct correlation or response to the team that Boston put together with those three, and that was the team that LeBron lost to in the conference finals, and Boston ended up winning their title against the Lakers. So that was really the beginning of – that was the domino effect right there.
No question.
So if you want to blame anybody, blame Kevin Garnett.
Sure. Went to Malden High School.
Exactly.
We can talk about
it. It all starts in South Carolina, from the state of South Carolina.
All right. We have a lot to get to today. Let's get going. 844-477-3776. The phone line's always open. Text line 71307. Please start your text message with ESPN. That's the keyword. And we're on Twitter at ESPN Upstate. In honor of Lonzo not being here today, I want to start with soccer.
Yes. He loves it so much.
Yeah. We have a big soccer story this morning. The U.S. and Mexico and Canada have defeated Morocco already. Morocco was the only challenger. I mean, if it couldn't beat Morocco, then it was going to be kind of sad. For the World Cup. Yep, the World Cup is coming in to the United States, basically to North America, in 2026, 8 years away. Set your smartphone calendar alerts now. The vote was held today, and 200 national soccer federations cast their ballots at the FIFA Annual Congress. 134 votes for the North America bid, and Morocco got 65, so it was basically a 2-1 vote. And only Iran chose neither option. Why does that not surprise you?
Of course. They're still holding a grudge.
It's not us. No one gets it.
Yeah. 2026 tournament will feature an expanded field, 48 teams. Right now it's only 32 teams. So it's going to go up to 48 teams. It will mark the first time in FIFA's history that a three-nation bid has been awarded this showplace event. I'm wondering where soccer will be 8 years from now, because it's growing exponentially. And, you know, how much excitement will there be for World Cup events in the U.S.?
I would be interested also to know who proposed the increase in the number of teams to be eligible up to 48.
Mm.
Might it have been the United States?
Because we can't get in.
Because we can't get in. Exactly.
We need to play in our own tournament, right? Can I have a year we'd like to be in it?
Yes. So to make sure that that happens, hey, how about let's increase it to 48 teams?
But am I correct in this, is that the home countries do get an automatic bid?
And they will, might. I'm
so,
not
so
certain.
We're getting three automatic bids in this, in Mexico, Canada, and the United States.
All right. Didn't know that, but I'll accept that. So we're in. Celebration begins.
That seems logical, so hopefully that is correct, Patrick.
Yeah. Now, we don't know the venues in either of the three nations for the World Cup events, but it's going to be all over the place, basically. Yeah. Here is speculation about where these events might be held. In Canada, the best candidates are Edmonton, Montreal and Toronto kind of makes sense.
Yeah, Toronto would definitely make sense.
Yeah, Toronto only accommodates, they can expand BMO Field, which hosts Toronto FC, to 40,000. They'll have to expand it to get to 40,000, but they can do that. Montreal has Olympic Stadium. That thing's been around forever. It's going to be about 50 years old when this thing kicks off. But it is the city's largest soccer venue, can host 66,000 fans. And in Edmonton, they have a stadium, Commonwealth Stadium, that can host 60,000, that can seat 60,000. They've got to put in a grass surface for 2026. They don't have that yet. But those are the three cities in Canada most likely to be a part of this. Three in Mexico as well. Of course, Mexico City, the Mexican capital. They've got a place that seats 87,000 fans, the Azteca. And there's going to be probably some events in Monterrey and in Guadalajara. Now, more of interest, the United States. A long list of cities that are in the running for events here. And they include Atlanta. How about that? Some World Cup events in Atlanta. Atlanta is becoming a soccer city.
They are. With Atlanta United, and we've had people actually call in and talk about they've been to some of those games at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And it consistently is a sellout, even to the point where times when they open up the upper deck, people are filling the upper deck as well. So there's a lot of interest. So with Mercedes-Benz Stadium, it's a state-of-the-art facility. And so even 8 years from now, it'll still probably be one of the better stadiums in the United States. So I think Atlanta's got a real good shot. They've hosted the Olympics as well. So they've got some history on their side.
They have the MLS All-Star Game this year, 2018. They also seat about 70,000 fans at Mercedes-Benz. So that's plenty big enough for this. And it's a top choice. They could be there could be semifinals in Atlanta. That's the word.
And I think one of the biggest areas of growth in terms of soccer expanding is within the Southeast. It seems to really kind of moving from the West over here to the Southeast.
No question. And there's not a whole lot of other Southeastern venues in here. In fact, if you count Miami, and I don't know if you can count it or not.
Yeah, that's not Southeast.
Yeah, that's a whole different place. But Miami's on the list. Probably be either Miami or Orlando. Orlando's a great soccer town, too. They've been doing really well with their soccer there. So one
that's
of
right.
those two in Florida will likely be a venue for some events. Boston on the short list. Foxborough at Gillette Stadium would be the venue. Of course, Jerry World in Dallas. AT&T Stadium. Yeah,
that's always going to be on a list.
Yep.
Every single time.
Yep. You can put 100,000 people in there. And that might be a semifinal venue for this. L.A., the second largest metropolitan area in the U.S., got to be on the list.
Of course.
Will they play at the Rose Bowl or the soon-to-be-completed Los Angeles Stadium at Hollywood Park? Opens in 2020, so it'll be open in plenty of time for this. One of those two venues in L.A. Kansas City. Chicago pulled out. Chicago's not in the running, so Kansas City kind of works their way back in because of that. Arrowhead Stadium for the Chiefs fits the bill. New York, of course, probably going to be the final. That's the way it looks. But it's the biggest metro area, of course, in the United States. It's a lock to be chosen for some events. Seattle, out in the Pacific Northwest, they love their soccer out there. So that makes a lot of sense. And then San Francisco in California. Levi Stadium, not that old. Just a few years old, and they've already had some high-profile matches there. And then one more, and that's Washington, home of the Capitals. Washington's not a soccer town, it's a hockey town.
It is a hockey town now. What are you talking about? Caps, all caps.
Feels good, but I will say this. There is a weird scenario that the United States, Canada, and Mexico have. They don't have to build any stadiums.
Yeah.
For the FIFA World Cup to come to towns, normally people have to build stadiums because they're not big enough. Every country has a stadium big enough to hold 80,000 plus people in an event. So the North America, each country doesn't have to spend that much money, just basically the publicity and the marketing and all that stuff and getting everything kind of ready for the World Cup.
Yeah.
No stadiums. This is going to be a lot of fun for the North America.
82,000 seats at FedEx Field, so Washington, a great place too. So those are kind of the short list for venues that are coming up. And it's pretty exciting. I don't know how many people from upstate South Carolina might traverse down to Atlanta for World Cup, but I would imagine some will, right?
in 8 years, you never know what it'll look like at that point. And especially if the U.S. has an opportunity to start getting better from a national perspective. There is the World Cup in 2022,
right?
And maybe that's an opportunity if there can be some excitement. And can the men's national team actually advance? I'm not saying actually necessarily winning it, but can they just even advance and be competitive? I think that will bring even more excitement once it is in North America in 2026.
They are projecting that bringing the World Cup to North America will produce revenues of $14 billion. That's insane, isn't it?
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So
not
money
bad
will
for
be
a soccer tournament.
Here. No, not bad for a sport that the some world people say is just not significant in this country. Obviously, it is.
It's very significant once you get out of the borders of the United States and North America.
So that's pretty. I think it was kind of a done deal. They were going to get it. They're going to win it. But it's pretty exciting that that it is coming to North America. To
Mexico, it was big news, and I don't know the TV rights. If Fox has the TV rights, and I think they actually do all the way to 2026. So they've got to be very excited. That as much as a disappointment that they don't have the U.S. in this World Cup, that in 2026 it's going to be in North America. That's even better for them.
There are 80 games to be played, and 60 of them will be in the United States. So 10 60. In Canada, 10 in Mexico, 60
I was wondering
in the
how
US.
It was going to be divvied up, and obviously, so I think there's multiple cities then that will be in true contention for the United States.
Oh, yeah. They'll have to have a lot,
they have to play 60
venues.
Games.
Absolutely.
That's a lot.
And again, the final should be at MetLife Stadium just outside New York. That's the expectation. So, you know, big soccer news today. And as we open up the World Cup tomorrow in Russia, I'm sure a lot of buzz will be about this 8 years down the road event in the United States. And maybe this, it's a good time to announce it. Maybe it'll generate a little more interest in this World Cup just to get people more pumped up about it, right?
Oh, without a doubt, especially since the U.S. is not in it this year. They needed some positive news, something positive to get people engaged again. And this might even bring people to watch in the next couple of weeks just to see, I'm a casual guy, casual fan of soccer. Let me see what all this FIFA thing is about, this World Cup.
We're going to need some new stars in 8 years, though, right? We can't expect Messi and Neymar and all those guys to hang around.
And Ronaldo, they'll be done.
Yeah,
they'll definitely be done. And even for the U.S., who's going to be the stars for the U.S. team?
Right.
We know like a Clint Dempsey, he's not going to be playing at that point either.
Right. All right, 844-477-3776. If you have any thoughts about the World Cup coming to North America in 2026, always love to hear from you. Text line 71307. U.S. Open, golf time again. We have another major starting tomorrow. And we'll talk about that and hear from Tiger Woods coming up. Just underway for the Wednesday huddle on ESPN Upstate. We'll be right back. Welcome back in. G-Mac, Richmond, Patrick Brown, and Verlonzo today. The huddle on ESPN Upstate. 844-477-3776. Should I jinx the no-hitter? Or should I just not talk about it?
Yeah, we talked about it here the last time.
Julio Teheran.
Julio Teheran had it, and we talked about it, and then he lost it.
Well, I mean, that's the most likely outcome is you're going to lose the no-hitter. Yeah.
So I think you can talk about it.
It's only bottom of the sixth.
Yeah, a long way to go.
Three more innings. 7, 8, 9. And, you know, Braves are leading the Mets 1-0.
Yeah.
Bottom of the sixth.
And now, and here's also the situation that we talked about last time. There was a question with Julio if they would pull him.
Right.
Based on the pitch count, would they take him out of the game? And he's got an opportunity for a no-hitter. I contend that you got to let him keep pitching.
Well, the guy who's got it today is Michael Soroka, and he's 20 years old. So, you know, he's got a young arm, young, lively arm there.
Keep throwing the heat.
let me see what his pitch count is. Do I have that? I don't think I even have that. They don't put pitch counts in the box score?
They should. I've seen it before. That's where we were talking about with.
Where is it? I don't see it. Anyway, right now the Braves are batting, so he's not going to lose it in the next few seconds, so we can not focus.
No, yeah, so we're not jinxing him right now.
On the TV.
We'll jinx him when he comes back.
But yeah, no-hitter through six, that's pretty good. The Braves up 1-0. They are playing in Atlanta, and not a very big crowd. I guess, you know, noon start, you're not going to have a very big
noon,
crowd.
Noon, it's Wednesday, it's in June, yeah. Schools just got out a couple of weeks ago. People could be on vacation.
It's hot
already.
Wah. Come on, Braves fans.
And
you got a good team this year.
Oh, here's the biggest thing.
What?
It's baseball.
That's not the biggest thing.
Yeah, it is. It's slow. It's
nothing,
boring.
Nothing wrong with baseball.
They just got done with the sixth inning. They started at noon.
Yeah.
It's a fast paced game. 1:30.
This is a fast game. This thing may be a 2-hour game here.
Yeah, this one is, but we know baseball is typically not. And 1-0. Give me 6-5.
Perfect, man. Perfect. 1-0. Are you kidding me? No hitter? Come on.
It's a pitching
You're complaining
duel.
About a no hitter.
I like the no hitter. Don't get me wrong, but I don't want to sit through a no hitter.
Seriously.
Yeah. Let me come in at the bottom of the ninth.
I give up.
Right? Let me come in at the bottom of the ninth and there's one out to go then I'm engaged.
No, you don't get to celebrate when the team gets the
yes,
championship. You stick with it the whole year.
No, that's fandom.
That's famous. I gotta isolate that for a promo. That's the most maybe one of the dumbest phrases we've had. I've called out Lonzo on the show, but I don't want to sit through a no-hitter. That's what you just said on the radio.
Yes, exactly. I told you, let me come in, bottom of the ninth, and I'm game on. Let's go.
I think we just got a Twitter poll question for us right there.
I love it.
Would you sit through a no-hitter, yes or no?
First of all, the game's much shorter. And it's kind of special. They don't happen all the time.
How do you know it's shorter? You don't know it's shorter.
Well, this one's pacing very fast.
No, I would agree. This one is pacing very nicely. Now you watch. So an hour and a half for six innings. Now it's going to take an hour for the next three innings.
That's possible.
That's 2.5 hours.
It's 2.5 hours. It's not bad.
I've seen NFL games go 4 hours.
Yeah, but that's 2.5 hours of 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
Give me 2.5 hours of 6-5. I'm good.
How much golf are you going to watch this weekend?
I actually will watch a decent amount.
If
Tiger is in it. But no.
No.
Yeah. And I'll watch more on Sunday than I will on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. This one's on Fox. They start really early. They're covered. So you can watch it like all day. The coverage is not very good, but you can watch it.
It is
all
a different
they're
type
trying.
Of coverage. Yeah.
Bless their hearts. Okay.
Yeah.
They're trying.
They're not CBS with golf coverage, but. Anyway, they'll have a lot of it. There'll be plenty of it for you to watch. Tiger Woods hasn't played in the U.S. Open since 2015, and he is very happy to be back on the course this week.
I've missed playing the U.S. Open. It's our nation's title. It's meant so much to me in my career, and obviously the USGA, what it has done for golf. This was... You know, the biggest event you could win growing up is win a USGA event. And to have won it, nine times is pretty special. So I'm looking forward to playing this week. I've really missed playing U.S. Opens. And a lot of this is pure bonus because of, where I was. Be able to have this opportunity to play USGA events, to play against these guys, best players in the world. It's a great feeling and one that I don't take for granted. If you've seen of the tournaments I've played in this year, there's always something. And hopefully that, this is one of those weeks where I've put it all together and even it out. And, we'll see what happens.
There's Tiger Woods. We just had a ground ball that was thrown over the first baseman's head, but he might have beaten that out. Scored a hit or scored an error? Hit. No hitter's over.
It's over. We jinxed it. Done. That fast.
Yeah. Well, you knew that was going to happen, right? So no hitter for Soroka today. So the thing about Tiger Woods, one thing about him is that he has taken his yacht to the U.S. Open, and he's staying there. 155-foot yacht. It's named Privacy, and he's docked it at Sag Harbor Yacht Club. And a lot of people are standing around looking at Privacy. Go figure, right?
Not too private.
Yeah. And he's paying, where's the number? It's over $1,000 a day to dock it there. $1,085 a day. Tiger can afford it. 155-foot yacht. And he talked about that this week. and said, yeah, it kind of helped for him to stay in his dinghy. He called it a dinghy. It's a 155-foot yacht. It's about a 15-mile drive from Shinnecock Hills Golf Club. He'll be trying to win his first major championship in a decade. So I don't know if that's going to help him.
It's his home away from home.
Yeah, he's trying to bring in it, you know,
his
so it
comfort to him.
Sure.
I get that.
If he does, every PGA player is buying a yacht.
Yeah, and taking it to the tournaments.
Or a motorhome.
No, I was going to say, or he'll just trailer that to every other event and sleep in it,
yep,
even though it's on land.
It is the Golf Channel recently aired rare footage from inside privacy. 5 staterooms. It'll hold 10 guests. 4 rooms for the crew of 9 that run it. 9-man crew to run the yacht. And it has an 8-person hot tub. Not bad. $20 million is reported to be the price tag of this yacht. And it costs $2 million a year to run it, to operate it. So that $1,085 a day is not a big problem, right?
That's loose change.
Yeah. Yeah. He said he was asked if there are any advantages to staying on the yacht during the Open, and he said, yeah, staying on the dinghy helps.
The dinghy.
Staying on the dinghy. Tiger. But, you know, look, if he wins this tournament, everybody will be talking about the yacht probably. I think Tiger will play well this weekend. Do you? I think he'll play well. I'm not expecting him to win the thing, but I think he'll be in the conversation. Make it to the weekend and be in the conversation.
I hope he does. And based on the fact that I know there was talk about how he's last tournament, he was all over the place hitting the ball, and his putting was what really let him down ultimately. But I think with even the length of this course and then widening the fairways by 15 to 20 yards on average, that'll only help him. And we know he's got the length. It's a matter of, can he produce those shots to get close where he doesn't have to rely so much on his putting? But we know putting is going to be so monumental just based on the greens. And I don't know if you saw that video that on Get Up with Greeny, that they showed dropping the ball on the 18th green and that it rolled for like 15 seconds all the way off the green. And all they did was just drop the ball.
That was now?
Yes, that was okay. As of today. Yes.
I know that in 2004 when they had the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, it was so dry they had no rain up there. And some of those greens were almost unplayable then. It's supposed to be a little better now, right?
We'll see. But from what I saw, it was almost, how do you play that?
It won't be easy. That kind of makes it fun, though.
Oh, it does. No, yeah. I agree. I like to see the guys really get challenged. And because we know they're great shot makers. It's what happens when the course is very difficult. And I guess from that time in 2004, they've increased the length of the course also by, I think, over 400 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So this course is playing almost 7,500 yards, and it's still a par 70.
Wow.
So that's hard.
Yeah. Another guy that really needs to play well is Jordan Spieth. He has no wins this year. Mostly putting for Jordan Spieth. A lot of short putts he's missed this year. He needs to get that together if he's going to be in contention. Dustin Johnson playing pretty well. Do you have any confidence in him?
I do. He's done it before, and he's playing really well. He's coming off of a very good weekend, and how he finished eagling out number 18.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you can't ask for a better way to finish. Granted, he had that tournament, you know, in the bag, so it didn't really matter. But knowing that he's already got a major under his belt now, and now he's coming in number one in the world, I think you've got to be in one of those positions. If you've got Dustin Johnson versus the field, you might be tempted to take Dustin Johnson.
Ooh, I wouldn't do that.
He's playing well.
I always like the field, though, in those kinds of bets. But yeah, he has as good a shot as anybody, certainly. All right, we got to hit a break. If you want to give us a call, 844-477-3776. Back in a moment. It's Greg McKinney, Richmond Weaver, and Patrick Brown in the huddle today on ESPN Upstate. So, Soroka gives up a hit and they pull him.
It's all about the pitch count.
74 pitches. 44 strikes out of 74 pitches in 6 1/3. allow one hit, one walk, four strikeouts. And Braves still up 1-0 over the Mets, and they are in the top of the seventh now in Atlanta. Yeah, yeah. They did not want to stretch that 20-year-old arm too far today, so once he gave up the hit, that was it for Soroka. But that's a good effort for him today.
But this is all of baseball now that
– Yeah.
I mean, it's all middle relievers, multiple relievers, before you even get to a closer, if you even get to that point. So, again, I think there's an opportunity of – if he was really in trouble, I get that you're going to pull him, but isn't there also an aspect of – try to go a complete game shutout?
No, nobody does that anymore.
I know. That's what, so we complain so much about, oh, we got to keep baseball the way it is, but it's really not.
It's evolved.
People are changing. You've got the defensive shift. That's a big issue with a lot of people right now and what that does to the game. And then, are you looking at now, if you go a complete game, that carries much more weight than it did probably years ago when it was really important?
Well, it's more significant because it doesn't happen, but I don't know that they want that out of their pitchers now. It would have been interesting if he hadn't lost the no-hitter, how long they would have left him in there.
I agree.
What would they have done?
I know there's been situations in the past couple of years where they've pulled guys who had a no-hitter, and you get a combined no-hitter.
Right.
But that's not.
Not the same thing.
That's special.
No, that's right. I don't know what they would have done, but he took him off the hook by giving up that. It's just a little ground ball that, the guy was going to beat out before the wide throw. That's the hit that he gave up.
Yeah, and the official scorer, could he have said, that's an error?
Could have. It would have been a bad call, though, because he was going to beat that out anyway. But anyway, Soroka is out, but the Braves have the 1-0 lead, so they have a chance to extend their lead while the Nationals are playing the Yankees. That's what messed me up on my bet.
Hey, that's a you problem.
The Braves got the Mets, and the Nats got the Yankees in New York. That's not fair. But anyway, I'll own it. A former Cowboys cheerleader has filed a federal lawsuit against the Cowboys. She said she wasn't paid for all her work. Okay, if she wasn't, then that's fair. But she's also complaining that she made less money than the mascot. Is that really a thing? Do you have to be paid more than the mascot?
Life is not fair.
I mean,
did we just talk about this in terms of Julio Jones? And hey, I understand he's frustrated. He's not making as much money as some of these other top wide receivers. But is this not the same type of situation?
Yeah.
Sorry, you're not making as much as the mascot.
No, again, look, if they didn't pay her what they owed her,
yeah, that's a different story.
Complaint,
but if she's complaining that the mascot made more money, than her.
She is. The lawsuit said female cheerleaders were paid at a rate less than Rowdy, the male mascot. The lawsuit claims that Wilkins' usual pay rate was $8 an hour. Okay. That payment was sometimes incomplete, and, the male mascot made $25 an hour. That is a little dramatic.
Yeah, but the male mascot has to be in a mascot suit, uniform, whatever.
Yeah.
It gets hot in that thing, right?
I mean, it's just two different jobs, so I don't see the complaint,
I mean, did they make the same amount of appearances? I mean, that's two different
it's just two different things.
I don't know.
The mascot could have been an opening for a local restaurant where the cheerleaders would just go to the big events.
Could be. This is not the first cheerleader suit we've had. Earlier this month, five former cheerleaders sued the Houston Texans. They alleged the team failed to fully compensate them as required by law and subjected them to a hostile work environment in which they were harassed, intimidated, and forced to live in fear. Again, different thing there.
Yeah.
Not defending that if that happened.
And also, this is a gender lawsuit as well. Because if Rowdy
were a female. No problem. She wouldn't have complained.
How can she complain other than the fact that she's not getting paid as much? Could she complain?
I mean, again, it's a different job whether a male or
female. I know, that's my point, is that I think it's more of that because it's a male and that the male is getting more money than the female. And I understand there's obviously some discrepancies, and we still see them today as far as equal pay.
Sure. I thought we were going to find out that, she was paid $8 and he was paid $9, but it's $25.
It is significant difference. I get it. It's three times. Yes. So it is eye-opening.
Yeah.
The difference.
Dang mascot
it's not a bad – I mean, it's a bad look.
Yeah. Mascot made $65,000 a year, man. That's not bad. Not bad for running around because it's only home games, right?
I would presume it's only home games.
Yeah. And you know,
now, again, there's more to it than, like Patrick was saying, there's got to be some live appearances that the mascot has to go to.
And you know that man is full-time. He's getting benefits with that, too.
I would suspect so.
He gets to dress up as a mascot, and he gets, you know, benefits and everything.
Mm. I mean, maybe a dude does something else for the team, too. I don't know, but she seems to think that
Or he could be there for a long time.
Yeah. Interesting to see how that plays out. We're seeing more and more of it. This is the year of the cheerleader lawsuit, apparently. So we have to see how they play out in the NFL. One more thing for Roger to deal with.
Don't you think he has to be at a point like, please stop?
Yeah, I think you'd like to focus a little more on football. But
he can't get away from it,
that's
though.
That's the times in which we live, right?
And it was embarrassing at the NFL draft. Just they would not stop booing him.
No, that's right. He's got to get used to that because that's not changing.
It's not.
Anytime soon. 844-GSP-ESPN. Break time. Back with more coming up. Teddy Cahill, Baseball America, joins us at 2:04 to talk about the College World Series here in the huddle on ESPN Upstate. We'll be right back. Final segment of the first hour of the huddle. We have some breaking NCAA news to try to unpack today. A lot of reaction coming into this as it just happened. Couple things. The Division I Council today officially approved a new rule that will eliminate the permission to contact process when a student athlete transfers programs. In the past, college coaches were able to block transferring athletes from certain schools, and the athlete was required to obtain permission for schools to contact him. That will no longer exist come October. Student athlete will now have the ability to transfer without asking for permission. This will allow the athlete to notify his current school of his desire to transfer, and then will require the school to put his name into a database within 2 business days. Upon being entered into the database, college coaches will be allowed to contact the athlete freely and without permission. How about that? That's pretty big. And they also approved a measure as part of this to allow athletes to compete in up to 4 games without losing a season of competition. That proposal had been tabled in April over concerns of timing, the number of games, potential application to other sports. Student athletes have 5 years to complete 4 seasons of competition, so the new rule will allow an athlete to use a red shirt if it hasn't been previously used up to 4 games of completion during the season. How about that?
2 big issues with significant impact to start the 2018 season. I mean, this is... Now, this is this year.
Yeah. They're saying October, so I guess I don't know why October instead of September.
No, I think that's for the transfer, but for the redshirt, I mean, that starts at the beginning of
season.
The 2018
season. That's right. So many questions about how they're going to
enforce
this.
A ton of questions.
Yeah. But interesting, and I, you know, in general, my reaction is positive to this, certainly to the transfer rule.
I agree with all of it. It has been ridiculous. It's about time that we allow the student athletes, the same type of situations that regular students have.
Yep.
And transfer coaches whenever they want to. They don't have to ask permission.
Coaches and whoever else. Right. Blake James is the council chair. He said, this change promotes not only fairness for college athletes, but also their health and well-being. Redshirt football student athletes are more likely to remain engaged with the team, and starters will be less likely to feel pressure to play through injuries. Interesting take on that. Coaches will appreciate the additional flexibility and ability to give younger players an opportunity to participate in limited competition. So 4 games and you can save the year.
It's got to be good for the coaches because it allows them some extra evaluation time in game situations.
They're not going to like this transfer rule, though. They're not going to like the transfer thing. They don't want these guys to be able to go without.
Because they want to be in control, but they can leave whenever they want to. They don't have to ask permission.
No, that's right, and that's been part of the complaint all along. How about this database? I mean, if they ask to transfer, you got 2 days to put them in the database and let everybody know, hey, up for grabs. Y'all come. You know they hate that. You know coaches are going to hate that. Oh, goodness. That's interesting.
Then it's going to be a recruiting all over again, because just because a guy says he wants to transfer, is there an opportunity where you could try to convince them not to?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of coaches probably do that. They might know ahead of time that an individual is wanting to transfer or talking about transferring, the possibility of transferring. And if they are in this situation, that once it's announced in 2 days, they're in that database, and all of a sudden you've got other coaches calling that quickly, it'll make it even harder for them to try to allow that person to look at it from a different lens and actually end up staying.
Some of this came about because of an Auburn case, and that's defensive tackle Antoine Jackson. He decided to transfer after the 2016 season. He said Auburn told him they would block him from any other SEC school, plus Ohio State or Clemson.
That's just insane to me.
Yeah.
And I understand. I know there's going to be people out there like, hey, you know, we don't want him to go into these specific schools, so you know, we're going to put in those stipulations, but that's just not right. That's not what America is built on, because especially when you've got situations where anybody else can do anything they want to from a perspective as far as transferring. I'm not saying they can do anything they want to. Obviously, there's limitations, but they try to claim these are students and then athletes, but they don't hold them to the same type of standards as regular students, but they want to, they want to, but not on this issue as far as transferring.
Pretty big news. Beginning in October, student athletes cannot be blocked from transferring, don't need permission, and will go into a national database. And the redshirt rule will allow players to play up to 4 games in a season and still be redshirted. It starts this year, this 2018 season. So there'll be a lot more coming on that. All right, when we come back on the other side, hour two of the huddle begins with Teddy Cahill, Baseball America senior writer. We'll talk about the College World Series in Omaha this weekend. Get started on Saturday. That's coming up. Rich Take on Sports coming up as well as we head into the second hour. Stay with us in the huddle on ESPN Upstate.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.